the bottom end extending a few inches beyond what was left of his torso. Webs of black energy spun incessantly over the hide's mottled surface. Quickben passed a hand over the object, and the web spread outward. The glittering black threads traced a chaotic pattern that insinuated Herlock's entire body, over flesh and through it, the pattern ever-changing, the changes coming faster and faster. Herlock jerked, his eyes bulging, then fell back. A breath escaped his lungs in a slow, steady hiss. When it ceased with a wet gurgle, he did not draw another. Quickben sat back on his haunches and glanced over at Whiskey Jack. The sergeant was now facing them, his expression unreadable. Tattersall wiped sweat from her brow with a grimy sleeve.
"It didn't work then. You failed to do whatever it was you were trying to do."
Quickben climbed to his feet. Kalam picked up the wrapped object and stepped close to Tattersall. The assassin's eyes were dark, penetrating as they searched her face. Quickben spoke.
"Hold on to it, sorceress. Take it back to your tent and unwrap it there. Above all, don't let Taishrin see it."
Tattersall scowled.
"What? Just like that?"
Her gaze fell on the object.
"I don't even know what I'd be accepting. Whatever it is, I don't like it."
The girl spoke directly behind her, in a voice that was sharp and accusing.
"I don't know what you've done, wizard. I felt you keeping me away. That was unkind."
Tattersall faced the girl, then glanced back at Quickben.
"What is all this?"
Tattersall thought. The black man's expression was glacial, but she saw a flicker around his eyes. Looked like fear. Whiskey Jack rounded on the girl at her words.
"You got something to say about all this, recruit?"
His tone was tight. The girl's dark eyes slid to her sergeant. She shrugged, then walked away. Kalam offered the object to Tattersall.
"Answers," he said quietly, in a North Seven Cities accent, melodic and round. "We all need answers, sorceress. The High Mage killed your comrades. Look at us. We're all that's left of the bridge burners. Answers aren't easily attained. Will you pay the price?"
With a final glance at Herlock's lifeless body, so brutally torn apart, and the lifeless stare of his eyes, she accepted the object. It felt light in her hands. Whatever was within the hide cocoon was slight in size. Parts of it moved, and against her grip she felt knobs and shafts of something hard. She stared at the assassin's bearish face.
"I want," she said slowly, "to see Taishrin get what he deserves."
"Then we're in agreement," Kalam said, smiling. "This is where it starts."
Tattersall felt her stomach jump at that smile.
"Woman, what's got into you?"
she thought. She sighed.
"Done."
As she turned away to descend the slope and make her way back to the main camp, she caught the girl's eye. A chill rippled through her. The sorceress stopped.
"You, recruit," she called. "What's your name?"
The girl smiled as if at a private joke.
"Sorry."
Tattersall grunted. It figured. She tucked the package under an arm and staggered down the slope. Sergeant Whiskey Jack kicked at a helmet and watched as it tumbled and bounced down the hillside. He spun and glared at Quickben.
"It's done?"
The wizard's eyes darted to Sorry, then he nodded.
"You will draw unwanted attention on our squad," the young girl told Whiskey Jack. "High Mage Taishrin will notice."
The sergeant raised an eyebrow.
"Unwarranted attention? What in Hood's name does that mean?"
Sorry made no reply. Whiskey Jack bit back sharp words. What had Fiddler called her?
An uncanny bitch.
He'd said it to her face, and she just stared him down with those dead, stony eyes. As much as he hated to admit it, Whiskey Jack shared the sapper's crude assessment. What made things even more disturbing, this 15-year-old girl had Quick Ben scared half out of his wits, and the wizard didn't want to talk about it. What had the Empire sent him? His gaze swung back to Tattersail. She was crossing the killing field below. The ravens rose screaming from her path and remained circling overhead, their caws uneasy and frightened. The sergeant felt Kalam's solid presence at his side.
"Hood's breath," Whiskey Jack muttered. "That sorcerer seems an unholy terror, as far as those birds are concerned."
"Not her," Kalam said. "It's what she's carrying."
Whiskey Jack scratched his beard, his eyes narrowing.
"This stinks. You sure it's necessary?"
Kalam shrugged.
"Whiskey Jack," Quick Ben said, behind them. "They kept us in the tunnels. Do you think the High Mage couldn't have guessed what would happen?"
The sergeant faced his wizard. A dozen paces beyond stood Sorry, well within hearing range. Whiskey Jack scowled at her, but said nothing. After a moment of heavy silence, the sergeant turned his attention to the city. The last of the Maranth legions was marching beneath the Westgate's arch. Columns of black smoke rose from behind the battered, scarred walls. He knew something of the history of grim enmity between the Maranth and the citizens of the once free city of Pale. Contested trade routes, two mercantile powers at each other's throat. And Pale won more often than not. At long last, it seemed that the black-armored warriors from beyond the western mountains, whose faces remained hidden behind the chitinous visors on their helms, and who spoke in clicks and buzzes, were evening the score. Faintly, beyond the cries of carrion birds, came the wail of men, women, and children, dying beneath the sword.
"Sounds like the Empress is keeping her word with the Maranth,"
Quick Ben said quietly.
"An hour of slaughter. I didn't think Dujek..."
"Dujek knows his orders," Whiskey Jack cut in. "And there's a High Mage taloned on his shoulder."
"An hour," Kalam repeated. "Then we clean up the mess."
"Not our squad," Whiskey Jack said. "We've received new orders."
The two men stared at their sergeant.
"And you still need convincing?"
Quick Ben demanded.
"They're driving us into the ground. They mean to..."
"Enough!" Whiskey Jack barked. "Not now. Kalam, find Fiddler. We need resupply from the Maranth. Round up the rest, quick, and take Sorry with you. Join me outside the High Fist tent in an hour."
"And you?"
Quick Ben asked.
"What are you going to do?"
The sergeant heard an ill-concealed yearning in the wizard's voice. The man needed a direction, or maybe a confirmation that they were doing the right thing.
A little late for that.
Even so, Whiskey Jack felt a pang of regret. He couldn't give what Quick Ben wanted the most. He couldn't tell him that things would turn out for the best. He sank down on his haunches, his eyes on Pale.
"What am I going to do?"
"I'm going to do some thinking, Quick Ben. I've been listening to you and Kalam, to Mallet and Fiddler. Even Trotz has been jawing in my ear. Well, now it's my turn. So leave me be, wizard, and take that damn girl with you."
Quick Ben flinched, seeming to withdraw. Something in Whiskey Jack's words had made him very unhappy, or maybe everything. The sergeant was too tired to worry about it. He had their new assignment to think over. Had he been a religious man, Whiskey Jack would have let blood in Hood's bowl, calling upon the shades of his ancestors. As much as he hated to admit it, he shared the feeling among his squad. Someone in the Empire wanted the bridge burners dead. Pale was behind them now, the nightmare nothing but the taste of ashes in his mouth. Ahead lay their next destination, the legendary city of Darujistan. Whiskey had a premonition that a new nightmare was about to begin. Down in the camp just beyond the last crest of denuded hills, horse-drawn carts loaded with wounded soldiers crowded the narrow aisles between the tent rows. All the precise order of the Malazan encampment had disintegrated, and the air was febrile with soldiers screaming their pain, giving voice to horror. Tattersail threaded her way around the dazed survivors, stepping across puddles of blood in the wagon ruts, her eyes lingering on an obscene pile of amputated limbs outside the Qatar tents. From the massive sprawl of the camp follower's slum of tents and shelters came a wailing dirge, a broken chorus of thousands of voices, the sound a chilling reminder that war was always a thing of grief. In some military headquarters back in the Empire's capital of Unta, 3,000 leagues distant, an anonymous aide would paint a red stroke across the Second Army on the active list, and then write in fine script beside it, "Pale, late winter, the 1,163rd year of Burns sleep." Thus would the death of 9,000 men and women be noted, and then forgotten. Tattersail grimaced.
"Some of us won't forget."
The bridge burners harbored some frightening suspicions. The thought of challenging Taishrin in a direct confrontation appealed to her sense of outrage, and if the High Mage had killed Kallet, her feeling of betrayal. But she knew that her emotions had a way of running away with her. A sorcery duel with the Empire's High Mage would buy her a quick passage to Hood's Gate. Self-righteous wrath had planted more corpses in the ground than an Empire could lay claim to. And as Kallet used to say, "Shake your fist all you want, but dead is dead." She'd witnessed all too many scenes of death since she had first joined the ranks of the Malazan Empire, but at least they couldn't be laid squarely at her feet. That was the difference, and it had been enough for a long time.
"Not as I once was. I've spent 20 years washing the blood from my hands."
Right now, however, the scene that rose again and again behind her eyes was the empty armor on the hilltop, and it gnawed at her heart. Those men and women had been running to her, looking for protection against the horrors of the plain below. It had been a desperate act, a fatal one, but she understood it. Taishrin didn't care about them, but she did. She was one of their own. In past battles, they had fought like rabid dogs to keep enemy legions from killing her. This time, it was a mage war. Her territory. Favors were traded in the Second. It's what kept everyone alive. And it's what had made the Second a legion of legend. Those soldiers had expectations, and they had the right to them. They'd come to her for salvation, and they died for it.
And if I had sacrificed myself then, cast my warren's defenses onto them instead of shielding my own hide?
She had been surviving on instinct back then, and her instincts had had nothing to do with altruism. Those kind of people didn't live long in war. Being alive, Tattersail concluded as she approached her tent, isn't the same as feeling good about it. She entered her tent and closed the flap behind her, then stood surveying her worldly possessions. Scant few, after 219 years of life. The oak chest, containing her book of fire sorcery, remained sealed by warding spells. The small collection of alchemical devices lay scattered on the tabletop beside her cot, like a child's toys abandoned in mid-game. Amid the clutter sat her deck of dragons. Her gaze lingered on the reading cards before continuing its round. Everything looked different now, as if the chest, the alchemy, and her clothes all belonged to someone else, someone younger, someone still possessing a shred of vanity.
Only the deck, the fatted, called out to her like an old friend.
Tattersail walked over to stand before it. With an absent gesture, she sat down the package given her by Kalam, then pulled out a stool from under the table. Sitting down, she reached for the deck. She hesitated. It had been months. Something had kept her away. Maybe Khaled's death could have been foretold, and maybe that suspicion had been pacing in the darkness of her thoughts all this time. Pain and fear had been shaping her soul all her life. But her time with Khaled had been another kind of shaping, something light, happy, pleasantly floating. She had called it mere diversion.
"How's that for willful denial?"
She heard the bitterness in her tone and hated herself for it. Her old demons were back, laughing at the death of her illusions.
"You refused the deck once before, the night before Mok's throat was opened, the night before Dancer and the man who would one day rule an empire stole into your master's, your lover's hold. Would you deny that a pattern exists, woman?"
Her vision blurry with memories she had thought buried forever. She looked down at the deck, blinking rapidly.
"Do I want you to talk to me, old friend? Do I need your reminders, your wry confirmation that faith is for fools?"
Emotion caught the corner of her eye. Whatever was inside the bound hide had moved. Lumps rose here and there, pushing against the seams. Tattersail stared. Then, her breath catching, she reached to it and set it in front of her. She withdrew a small dagger from her belt and began to cut the seams. The object within went still, as if awaiting the result of her efforts. She peeled back a sliced flap of hide.
"Sail!"
said a familiar voice. Her eyes widened as a wooden marionette, wearing bright yellow silk clothing, climbed out of the bag. Painted on its round face were features she recognized.
"Herlock, good to see you again,"
the marionette said, rising to its feet. It wobbled and held out artfully carved hands to regain balance.
"And the soul did shift," he said,
doffing his floppy hat and managing an unsteady bow.
"Soul shifting.
But that's been lost for centuries. Not even Tatian."
She stopped, pursing her lips. Her thoughts raced.
"Later,"
Herlock said. He took a few steps, then bent his head forward to study his new body.
"Well,"
he sighed,
"one mustn't quibble, must one?"
He looked up and fixed painted eyes on the sorceress.
"You have to go to my tent before the thought occurs to Tatian. I need my book. You're part of this now. There's no turning back."
"Part of what?"
Herlock made no reply, having broken his uncanny stare. He lowered himself down to his knees.
"Thought I smelled a deck," he said.
Sweat ran in cold rivulets under Tattersail's arms. Herlock had made her uneasy at the best of times, but this... She could smell her own fear. That he'd swung his gaze from her made her grateful for small mercies. This was elder magic, Kurald Galain, if the legends were true. And it was deadly, vicious, raw, and primal. The Bridgeburners had a reputation for being a mean crowd, but to walk the warrens closest to chaos was pure madness. Or desperation. Almost of its own accord, her thigh warren opened and a surge of power filled her weary body. Her eyes snapped to the deck. Herlock must have sensed it.
"Tattersail,"
he whispered, amusement in his tone.
"Come, the fatted calls to you. Read what is to be read."
Profoundly disturbed by her own answering flush of excitement, Tattersall reluctantly reached for the deck of dragons. She saw her hand tremble as it closed on it. She shuffled slowly, feeling the chill of the lacquered wooden card seep into her fingers and then her arms.
"I feel a storm raging in them already," she said, trimming the deck and setting it down on the tabletop.
Hairlock's answering laugh was eager and mean.
"First house sets the course. Quickly!"
She turned over the top card, her breath caught.
"Night of Dark."
Hairlock sighed.
"The Lord of Night rules this game. Of course."
Tattersall studied the painted figure. The face remained blurred as it always did. The knight was naked, his skin jet black. From the hips up he was human, heavily muscled, holding aloft a black two-handed sword that trailed smoky, ethereal chains drifting off into the background's empty darkness. His lower body was draconian, its armored scales black, paling to grey at the belly. As always, she saw something new, something she had never seen before that pertained to the moment. There was a shape suspended in the darkness above the knight's head. She could only detect it on the edge of her vision, a vague hint that vanished when she focused on the place itself.
"Of course, you never give up the truth so easily, do you?" she thought.
"Second card,"
Hairlock urged, crouching close to the playing field inscribed on the tabletop. She flipped the second card.
"Opon."
The two-faced jester of chance.
"Hood's curse on their meddling ways," Hairlock growled.
The lady held the upright position, her male twin's bemused stare upside down at the card's foot. Thus the thread of luck that pulled back rather than pushed forward, the thread of success. The lady's expression seemed soft, almost tender, a new facet marking how things now balanced. A second heretofore unseen detail caught Tattersall's intense study. Where the lord's right hand reached up to touch the lady's left, a tiny silver disc spanned the space between them. The sorceress leaned forward, squinting. A coin. And on the face a male head. She blinked. No female. Then male. Then female. She sat back suddenly. The coin was spinning.
"Next!" Hairlock demanded. "You are too slow!"
Tattersall saw that the marionette was paying no attention to the card upon, and had in fact probably given it only sufficient notice to identify it. She drew a deep breath. Hairlock and the bridge burners were tied up in this. She knew that instinctively. But her own role was as yet undecided. With these two cards, she already knew more than they did. It still wasn't much. But it might be enough to keep her alive in what was to come. She released her breath all at once, reached forward, and slammed a palm down on the deck. Hairlock jumped, then whirled to her.
"You hold on this," he raged. "You hold on the fool, the second card, absurd. Play on, woman."
"No,"
Tattersall replied, sweeping the two cards into her hands and returning them to the deck.
"I've chosen to hold, and there's nothing you can do about it."
She rose.
"Bitch, I can kill you in the blink of an eye, here and now."
"Fine,"
Tattersall said.
"A good excuse for missing Taishren's debriefing. By all means proceed, Hairlock."
Crossing her arms, she waited. The marionette snarled.
"No," he said. "I have need of you, and you despise Taishren even more than I."
He cocked his head, reconsidering his last words, then barked a laugh.
"Yeah, thus I am assured there will be no betrayal."
Tattersall thought about that.
"You are right," she said.
She turned and walked to the tent flap. Her hand closed on the rough canvas, then she stopped.
Herlock, how well can you hear?
Well enough,
the marionette growled behind her.
Do you hear anything, then?
A spinning coin, she thought. Camp sounds is all. Why, what do you hear?
Tattersail smiled. Without answering, she pulled aside the tent flap and went outside. As she headed toward the command tent, a strange hope sang through her. She had never held Opon as an ally. Calling on luck in anything was sheer idiocy. The first house she had placed, darkness, touched her hand ice cold, loud with the crashing waves of violence and power run amok. And yet an odd flavor there, something like salvation. The knight could be enemy or ally, or more likely neither. Just out there, unpredictable, self-absorbed. But Opon rode the warrior's shadow, leaving house dark, tottering on the edge, suspended in a place between night and day. More than anything else, it had been Opon's spinning coin that had demanded her choice to hold. Herlock heard nothing. Wonderful. Even now, as she approached the command tent, the faint sound continued in her head, as it would for some time, she believed. The coin spun and spun. Opon whirled two faces to the cosmos, but it was the lady's bet. Spin on, Silva. Spin on. Chapter 3 Thelomen Tathano Toblakai. Find the names of a people so reluctant to fade into oblivion. Their legend rots my cynical cast, and blights my eyes with bright glory. Cross not the loyal cage embracing their unassailable heart. Cross not these solid menhirs, ever loyal to the earth. Thelomen Tathano Toblakai. Still standing, these towering pillars mar the gelid scape of my mind. Gothos Folly, Book 2, Chapter 4. Gothos, birthdate unknown. The Imperial trireme carved the deep-sea troughs like a relentless axe blade, sails stretched and spars creaking under the steady wind. Captain Ganoes Paran remained in his cabin. He had long since grown tired of scanning the eastern horizon for the first sighting of land. It would come, and it would come soon. He leaned against the sloping wall opposite his bunk, watching the lantern sway, and idly tossed his dagger into the lone table's center pole, which was now studded with countless tiny holes. A cool, musty brush of air swept across his face, and he turned to see Topper emerge from the Imperial Warren. It had been 2 years since he had last seen the Clawmaster.
"Hood's breath, man!" Paran said. "Can't you find another color of cloth? This perverse love of green must surely be curable."
The tall half-blood Tista Andii seemed to be wearing the same clothes as the last time Paran had seen him. Green wool, green leather. Only the countless rings spearing his long fingers showed any splash of contrary color. The Clawmaster had arrived in a sour mood, and Paran's opening words had not improved it.
"You imagine I enjoy such journeys, Captain? Seeking out a ship on the ocean is a challenge of sorcery few could manage."
"Makes you a reliable messenger, then," Paran muttered.
"I see you've made no effort to improve on courtesy, Captain. I admit I understand nothing of the adjunct's faith in you."
"Don't lose sleep over it, Topper. Now you've found me, what is the message?" The man scowled.
"She's with the bridge burners, outside Pale."
"The siege continues. How old is your information?"
"Less than a week, which is as long as I've been hunting you. In any case," he continued, "the deadlock is about to be broken."
Paran grunted, then he frowned. Which squad?
You know them all?
Yes, Paran asserted. Topper's scowl deepened. Then he raised a hand and began examining his rings.
Whiskey Jacks. She's one of his recruits.
Paran closed his eyes. It should not have surprised him. The gods are playing with me, Paran thought. Question is, which gods? Oh, Whiskey Jack. You once commanded an army, back when Lassine was named Surly, back when you could have listened to your companion, when you could have made a choice. You could have stopped Surly. Hood, perhaps you could have stopped me. But now you command a squad, just a squad, and she's the Empress. And me? I'm a fool who followed his dream, and now all I desire is its end. He opened his eyes and regarded Topper. Whiskey Jack. The War of Seven Cities. Through the Breach at Arran, the Holy Desert Raraku, Panpotsen, Nathilog.
All in the Emperor's time, Paran.
So, Paran said, I'm to take command of Whiskey Jack's squad. The mission will take us to Darujistan, to the City of Cities.
Your recruit is showing her powers,
Topper said, grimacing.
She's corrupted the bridge burners, possibly even Dujek One Arm, and the entire second and third armies on Jenabakis.
You can't be serious. Besides, my concern is with the recruit, with her, only her. The adjunct agrees we've waited long enough. Now you're telling me we've waited too long? I can't believe Dujek's about to become a renegade. Not Dujek. Not Whiskey Jack either.
You are to proceed as planned, but I have been instructed to remind you that secrecy is paramount, now more than ever. An agent of the Claw will contact you once you reach Pale. Trust no one else. Your recruits found her weapon, and with it she means to strike at the heart of the Empire. Failure cannot be considered.
Topper's odd eyes glinted.
If you now feel unequal to the task.
Paran studied the man standing before him. If it's as bad as you describe, he thought, why not send in a hand of Claw assassins? The man sighed, as if he'd somehow heard Paran's silent question.
A god is using her, Captain. She won't die easily. The plan for dealing with her has required adjustments. Expansion, in fact. Additional threats must be taken care of, but these are threads already woven. Do as you have been commanded. All risk must be removed if we are to take Darujistan, and the Empress wants Darujistan. She also feels it is time for Dujek One Arm to be, he smiled, disarmed.
Why?
He has a following. It still held that the Emperor had Old One Arm in mind as his heir.
Paran snorted. The Emperor planned to rule forever, Topper. This suspicion of Lassine's is plain ridiculous, and persists only because it justifies her paranoia.
Captain, Topper said quietly, greater men than you have died for less. The Empress expects obedience of her servants, and demands loyalty.
Any reasonable ruler would have the expectation and the demand the other way around. Topper's mouth thinned to a pale line.
Assume command of the squad, stay close to the recruit, but otherwise do nothing to make her suspicious of you. Once in place, you are to wait. Understood?
Paran looked away, his gaze finding the porthole. Beyond was blue sky. There were too many omissions, half-truths and outright lies in this. This chaotic mess, he thought. How will I play it when the time comes? The recruit must die. At least that much is certain. But the rest? Whiskey Jack, I remember you. You stood tall then,
and in my dreams I never imagined this growing nightmare. Will I have your blood on my hands when all this is done? At the very heart of things, he realized, he no longer knew who was the ultimate betrayer in all this. If a betrayer, there must be. Was the Empire the Empress? Or was it something else? A legacy, an ambition, a vision at the far end of peace and wealth for all? Or was it a beast that could not cease devouring? Darujistan, the greatest city in the world. Would it come to the Empire in flames? Was there wisdom in opening its gates? Within the troubled borders of the Malazan Empire, people lived in such peace as their ancestors had never imagined. And if not for the claw, for the endless wars in distant lands, there would be freedom as well. Had this been the Emperor's dream at the very beginning? Did it matter any more?
Are my instructions understood, Captain?
He glanced over at the man and waved a hand. Well enough. Snarling, Topper spread wide his arms. The Imperial Warren yawned behind him. He stepped back and was gone. Paran leaned forward, his head in his hands. It was the season of currents, and in the port city of Genabaris, the heavy Malazan transports rocked and twisted, straining at their ropes like massive beasts. The piers, unused to such gargantuan craft moored alongside them, creaked ominously with every wayward, savage pull on the bollards. Crates and cloth-wrapped bundles crowded the yards, supplies fresh in from the Seven Cities and destined for the front lines. Supply clerks clambered over them like monkeys, hunting sigils of identification and chattering to each other over the heads of dockmen and soldiers. The agent leaned against a crate at the foot of the pier, his burly arms crossed and his small narrow eyes fixed on the officer sitting on a bundle some 30 yards farther down the pier. Neither had moved in the last hour. The agent was having a hard time convincing himself that this was the man he had been sent to retrieve. He looked awfully young, and as green as the rancid water of this bay. His uniform still bore its maker's chalk lines, and the leather grip of his longsword showed not a single sweat stain. He had the stink of nobility about him like a perfumed cloud. And for the past hour, he'd just been sitting there, hands in lap, shoulders hunched, watching like some stupid cow the frenzied activity swirling around him. Though he ranked captain, not a single soldier even bothered to salute him. The stink wasn't subtle. The adjunct must have been knocked on her head during that last assassination attempt on the Empress. It was the only possible explanation for this farce of a man rating the kind of service the agent was about to deliver. In person yet? These days, he concluded sourly, the whole show was being run by idiots. With a loud sigh, the agent pushed himself upright and sauntered over to the officer. The man didn't even know he had company until the agent stepped in front of him. Then he looked up. The agent did some quick rethinking. Something in this man's gaze was dangerous. There was a glitter there, buried deep, that made the man's eyes seem older than the rest of his face. Name? The agent's question was a strained grunt. Took your time about it, the captain said, rising.
Tall bastard, too.
The agent scowled. He hated tall bastards.
Who are you waiting for, captain?
The man looked up the pier. The waiting's over. Let's walk. I'll just take it on faith you know where we're going. He reached down and retrieved a duffel bag, then took the lead. The agent moved up beside the captain.
Fine, he growled. Be that way.
They left the pier and the agents turned them up the first street on the right.
A green call came in last night. You'll be taken directly to Cloud Forest, and from there a black will take you into Pale.
The captain gave the agent a blank stare.
You never heard of calls?
No. I assume they're a means of transportation.
Why else would I be removed from a ship 1,000 leagues distant from Pale? The Maranth used them, and we're using the Maranth. The agent scowled to himself. Using them a lot these days. The Green do most of the courier stuff, and moving people around like you and me, but the Black are stationed in Pale, and the different clans don't like to mix. The Maranth are made up of a bunch of clans, got colours for names, and wear them too. Nobody gets confused that way. And I'm to ride with a Green, on a Qual. You got it, Captain. They headed up a narrow street. Malazan guards milled around every crossing, hands on their weapons. The captain returned a salute from one such squad. Having trouble with insurrections? He asked.
Insurrections? Yeah. Trouble? No.
Let's see if I understand you correctly. The captain's tone was stiff. Instead of delivering me by ship to a point nearest Pale, I'm to ride overland with a bunch of half-human barbarians who smell like grasshoppers and dress like them too. And this way, no one will notice, especially since it'll take us a year to get to Pale. And by then, everything will have gone straight to Hood's Gate. Correct so far? Grinning, the agent shook his head. Despite his hatred for tall men, or rather, men taller than himself, he felt his guard going down. At least this one talked straight. And for a noble, that was pretty impressive. Maybe Lorne still had the old stuff after all.
You said overland? Well, yes, Captain. Way overland.
He stopped at a nondescript doorway and turned to the man.
Quals, you see. They fly. They got wings. 4, in fact. And you can see right through every one of them. And if you're of a mind, you can poke your finger through one of those wings. Only don't do it when you're a quarter mile upright, because it may be a long way down, but it'll seem awfully fast at the time. You hear me, Captain?
He opened the door. Beyond rose a staircase. The man's face had lost its colour. So much for intelligence reports, he muttered. The agent's grin widened.
We see them before you do. Life's on a need to know. Remember that, Captain?
The man's smile was the only answer he gave. They entered and closed the door behind them. A young Marine intercepted Tattersail as she made her way across the compound in what was now Empire headquarters in Pale. The boy's face had bewilderment written all over it, and he opened his mouth a few times before any words came out.
Sorceress?
She stopped. The thought of having Taishren wait a little longer appealed to her.
What is it, soldier?
The Marine stole a glance over one shoulder, then said,
The guards, sorceress. They've got something of a problem. They sent me to...
Who? Which guards?
Take me to them. Yes, sorceress.
She followed the Marine around the nearest corner of the main building, where the compound wall ran close, creating a narrow passage running the building's length. At the far end knelt a figure, his bare head bowed. Beside him was a large, lumpy burlap sack, covered in brown stains. Clouds of flies swarmed around both the man and the sack. The Marine halted and turned to the sorceress.
He still hasn't moved. The guards keep getting sick when they patrol through here.
Tattersail stared at the huddled man, a sudden welling of tears behind her eyes. Ignoring the Marine, she strode into the aisle. The stench hit her like a wall. Damn, she thought. He's been here since the battle. 5 days. The sorceress came closer. Though Belladan knelt, his head came near to her own height. The Thelemen High Mage still wore what was left of his battle garb. The ragged strips of fur scorched and torn, the rough weaver fragments of tunic stained with blood. As she arrived to stop before him, she saw that his neck and face were covered in burn blisters, and most of his hair was gone.
You look terrible, Belladan, she said.
The giant's head slowly turned, red-rimmed eyes focused on her face.
Oh, he rumbled. Tattersail.
His exhausted smile cracked the charred flesh of one cheek. The wound gaped red and dry. That smile almost broke her down.
You need healing, old friend.
Her gaze flicked to the burlap sack, its surface crawled with flies.
Come on. Nightjill would bite your head off if she could see you now.
She felt a trembling steal into her, but grimly pressed on.
We'll take care of her, Belladon. You and me. But we'll need our strength to do that.
The Thelemen shook his head slowly.
I choose this, Tattersail. The scars without are the scars within.
He drew a deep breath.
I will survive these wounds, and I alone will raise my love's barrow. But the time is not yet right.
He laid a massive hand on the sack.
Taishren has given me leave to do this. Will you do the same?
Tattersail was shocked to feel a surge of anger rising up in her.
Taishren gave you leave, did he?
To her own ears, her voice sounded brutal, a harsh grating of sarcasm. She saw Belladan flinch and seem to withdraw, and a part of her wanted to wail, to throw her arms around the giant and weep. But rage possessed her.
That bastard killed Nightjill, Belladan. The Moon's Lord had neither the time nor the inclination to raise demons. Think about it. Taishren had the time to prepare.
No!
The Thelemon's voice thundered down the aisle. He surged to his feet and Tattersail stepped back. The giant looked ready to tear down the walls, a desperate fire in his eyes. His hands closed into fists, then his glare fixed on her. He seemed to freeze. All at once his shoulders slumped, his hands opened, and his eyes dimmed.
No,
he said again, this time in a tone filled with sorrow.
Taishren is our protector. As he has always been, Tattersail. Remember the very beginning? The Emperor was mad, but Taishren stood at his side. He shaped the Empire's dream, and so opposed the Emperor's nightmare. We underestimated the Lord of Moonspawn. That is all.
Tattersail stared up at Belladan's ravaged face. The memory of Hairlock's torn body returned to her. There was an echo there, but she couldn't quite catch it.
I remember the beginning,
she said softly, doing some searching of her own. The memories remained sharp, but whatever thread there was that connected them to now still eluded her. She wanted desperately to talk to Quickburn, but she had seen nothing of the Bridgeburner since the day of the battle. They'd left her with Hairlock, and that puppet scared her more and more with every passing day. Particularly now that he'd found a grudge to hold on to. The scene with the deck of dragons still smarted, and he worked it by keeping her in the dark.
The Emperor had a knack for gathering the right people around him, she continued. But he wasn't a fool. He knew the betrayal would come from that group. What made us the right people was our power. I remember, Belladan.
She shook her head.
The Emperor's gone, but the power's still here.
Tattersail's breath caught.
And that's it, she said, half to herself. Taishren's the thread.
The Emperor was insane, Belladan said. Else he would have protected himself better.
Tattersail frowned at that. The Thelemon had a point. Like she just said, that old man wasn't a fool.
So what had happened? I'm sorry. We must talk later. The High Mage has summoned me. Belladan, will we talk later?
The giant nodded.
As you wish. Soon I will depart to raise Nightjill's barrow. Far out on the Rivi Plain, I think.
Tattersail glanced back up the aisle. The Marines still stood there, shifting from one foot to the other.
Belladan, would you mind if I cast a sealing spell on her remains?
His eyes clouded, and he looked down at the sack.
The gods are unhappy, it's true.
He thought for a moment, then said,
Yes, Tattersail. You may do that.
It smells bad from here to the throne,
Kalam said, his scarred face twisted with worry. He sat crouched on his haunches, absently scratching the lines of a web on the ground with his dagger, then looked up at his sergeant. Whiskey Jack eyed pale, stained walls, the muscles of his jaw bunching beneath his beard. The last time I stood on this hill, he said, his gaze narrowing, it was crowded with armor, and a mage and a half. He was silent for a time, then he sighed.
Go on, Corporal.
Kalam nodded.
I pulled some old threads, he said, squinting against the harsh morning light. Somebody high up has us marked. Could be the court itself, or maybe the nobility. There's rumors they're back at it behind the scenes.
He grimaced.
And now we've got some new captain from Unta, eager to get our throats cut. Four captains in the last 3 years. Not one worth his weight in salt.
Quick Ben stood 10 feet away, at the hill's crest, his arms crossed. He now spoke.
You heard the plan? Come on, Whiskey Jack. That man slid straight out of the palace and into our laps on a stream of...
Quiet, Whiskey Jack muttered. I'm thinking.
Kalam and Quick Ben exchanged glances. A long minute passed. On the road below, troop wagons rattled in the ruts leading into the city. Remnants of the 5th and 6th armies, already battered, almost broken by Caladan Brood and the Crimson Guard. Whiskey Jack shook his head. The only force intact was the Maranth, and they seemed determined to field only the black regiments, using the green for lifts and drops.
And where in Hood's name was the gold he'd been hearing so much about?
Damn those unhuman bastards anyway, Whiskey Jack thought.
Pale's gutters still ran red from their hour of retribution. Once the burial shifts were through, there'd be a few more hills outside the city's walls. Big ones. There would be nothing to mark 1,300 dead bridge burners, though. The worms didn't need to travel far to feast on those bodies. What chilled the sergeant to his bones was the fact that apart from the few survivors, nobody had made a serious effort to save them. Some low-ranking officer had delivered Taishran's commiserations on those lost in the line of duty, then had unloaded a wagonload of tripe about heroism and sacrifice. His audience of 39 stone-faced soldiers had looked on without a word. The officer was found dead in his room 2 hours later, expertly garrotted. The mood was bad. Nobody in the regiment would have thought of something so ugly 5 years ago. But now they didn't blink at the news.
Garrot. Sounds like claw work, Whiskey Jack thought.
Kalam had suggested it was a setup, an elaborate frame to discredit what was left of the bridge burners. Whiskey Jack was skeptical. He tried to clear his thoughts. If there was a pattern, it would be a simple one, simple enough to pass by unnoticed. But exhaustion seeped in like a thick haze behind his eyes. He took a deep lungful of the morning air.
The new recruit?
He asked. Kalam rose from his haunches with a grunt. A faraway and long-ago look entered his eyes.
Maybe, he said finally. Pretty young for a claw, though.
I never believed in pure evil before Sorry showed up, Quick Ben said. But you're right. She's awfully young. How long are they trained before they're sent out?
Kalam shrugged uneasily.
15 years minimum. Mind you, they get them young. 5 or 6.
Could be Majory involved, making her look younger than she is,
Quick Ben said,
high-level stuff, but within Taishran's abilities.
Seems too obvious, Whiskey Jack muttered. Call it bad upbringing.
Quick Ben snorted.
Don't tell me you believe that, Whiskey Jack.
The sergeant's face tightened.
The subject's closed, I'm sorry. And don't tell me what I think, wizard.
He faced Kalam.
All right. You think the Empire's into killing its own these days? You think Lassine's cleaning her house, maybe? Or someone close to her? Getting rid of certain people? Fine. Tell me why.
The old guard, Kalam replied immediately. Everyone's still loyal to the Emperor's memory.
Doesn't wash, Whiskey Jack said. We're all dying off anyway. We don't need Lassine's help. Apart from Dujek, there's not a man in this army here who even knows the Emperor's name, and nobody'd give a damn in any case. He's dead. Long live the Empress.
She ain't got the patience to wait it out, Quick Ben said.
Kalam nodded agreement.
She's losing momentum as it is. Things used to be better. It's that memory she wants dead.
Hairlocks are sneak in the hole, Quick Ben said with a sharp nod. It'll work, Whiskey Jack. I know what I'm doing on this one.
We do it the way the Emperor would have, Kalam added. We turn the game. We do our own house cleaning.
Whiskey Jack raised a hand. All right, now be quiet. You're both sounding too damn rehearsed. He paused.
It's a theory, a complicated one.
Who's in the know and who isn't?
He scowled at Quick Ben's expression.
Right, that's Hairlock's task. But what happens when you come face to face with someone big, powerful, and mean?
Like Taishran?
The wizard grinned.
Right, I'm sure you've got an answer. Let's see if I can work it out myself. You look for someone even nastier. You make a deal and you set things up, and if we're quick enough, we'll come out smelling of roses.
Am I close, wizard?
Kalam snorted his amusement.
Quick Ben looked away.
Back in the Seven Cities, before the Empire showed up.
Back in the Seven Cities is back in the Seven Cities, Whiskey Jack said. Hood knows I led the company chasing you across the desert, remember?
I know how you work, Quick, and I know you're damn good at this. But I also recall that you were the only one of your cabal to come out alive back then, and this time?
The wizard seemed hurt by Whiskey Jack's words. His lips thinned to a straight line. The sergeant sighed.
All right, we go with it. Start things rolling. And pull that sorceress all the way in. We'll need her if Hairlock breaks his chains.
And sorry? Kalam asked.
Whiskey Jack hesitated. He knew the question behind that question. Quick Ben was the squad's brains, but Kalam was their killer. Both made him uneasy with their single-minded devotion to their respective talents.
Leave her alone, he said at last.
For now.
Kalam and Quick Ben sighed, sharing a grin behind their sergeant's back.
Just don't get cocky, Whiskey Jack said dryly.
The grins faded. The sergeant's gaze returned to the wagons entering the city. Two riders approached.
All right, he said. Mount up. Here comes our reception committee.
The riders were from his squad, Fiddler and Sorry.
You think the new captain's arrived?
Kalam asked, as he climbed into his saddle. His roan mare turned her head and snapped at him. He growled in return. A moment later, the two longtime companions settled down into their mutual mistrust. Whiskey Jack looked on, amused.
Probably. Let's head down to them. Anybody up on the wall watching us might be getting antsy.
Then his humor fell away. They had, indeed, just turned the game. And the timing couldn't have been worse. He knew the full extent of their next mission, and in that he knew more than either Quick Ben or Kalam. There was no point in complicating things even further, though.
They'll find out soon enough, he thought.
Tattersail stood half a dozen paces behind High Mage Tatian.